He bent over, and with a red face and with veins popping in his neck, screamed, "They don't care about me." I had brought my students back from summer conference in RUF. The last thing we do at the end of the school year is we have a conference in Florida, and I brought my students back. And one of my students, when we dropped him off, realized that his car was not where he had left it. And after a couple of phone calls, he realized his car had been towed and was going to cost over $300 to get it out of the impound lot. It was towed from a parking lot that had not been in use that week and that he was absolutely sure would be safe. And when he found out that this school that he paid all of his tuition to had his car towed, he felt betrayed and lied to, and he screamed, "They don't care about me." And part of me was tempted to be the pastor and to kind of step in and say, "No, no, it's not like that," or even correct him and say, "You know, don't be selfish. You knew the rules." But I just kind of let him sit in the juice of experience, the juice of life. The juice that says, you know what? When you were a kid, people made exceptions for you all the time because you were a kid. But in the real world, nobody cares about you. That's gross. And that's mean. But it's true. In the real world, no one is looking out for anybody else, really, because we're all looking out for ourselves, honestly. And the truth is that we need someone to care for us. We need someone to help us. We need someone to walk with us and help us to avoid the potholes and the destruction of life. And only Jesus loves us with a perfect, self-giving love. He calls that being the Good Shepherd. Please stand as we read this just tremendous text from John chapter 10, verses 11 through 18. Hear the word of the Lord. "I am the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also. And they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father." As far as the reading of God's holy word, it is sweeter than honey from the honeycomb and more precious than gold and much fine gold. Let's give our attention to it. You may be seated. We need someone to care for us. And only Jesus loves us with a perfect and self-giving love. We need a shepherd. Life is confusing. Life is difficult. We make bad decisions. We don't have the information that we need to make good decisions. We're called upon to make important choices about where to live and what job to take and who to marry and who not to marry and where to go to school and what to study while you're in school and how to raise your kids and what school to put your kids in and what school to and what sports to enroll your kids in. And all these things actually matter. They're all important, but you just don't know the truth. You don't know every other kid in that school, so how can you possibly know which school is the best one to put your kids in? You don't know who you're going to meet in college, so how can you possibly know which college to go to? It's hard. We make wrong decisions and we feel alone. Oftentimes we feel terribly alone. I looked up Robin Williams today, actually for a later illustration, but I was reminded of his words when he said, "I used to think the worst thing in the world was to be all alone, but it's not. The worst thing is to be surrounded by people who make you feel alone." And that's what the world's like. And Jesus says to get through this world, you need a shepherd. You need somebody who will come and find you. We need a shepherd. Most of you already know that, but some of you may need convincing, so let me just take another swing at it. You remember what you were like 10 years ago? How cocksure you were? How you knew what you wanted to be. You know, some of you were just getting into college and you knew exactly what it was going to be like. Some of you were just getting out of college. You knew exactly what the world was going to hold. Some of you were, maybe you were just having your first child. You knew exactly what raising a parent. I remember how confident I was. If I just disciplined them correctly and consistently, everything would be perfect. How did that work out for you? You didn't know anything 10 years ago, did you? I'm going to let you in on a secret because I've turned my fifth decade now. 10 years from now, you're going to look back on you today and think, you didn't know anything. Your 30-year-old self laughs at your 20-year-old self. Your 40-year-old self mocks your 30-year-old self. Your 50-year-old self feels pathetically sorry for your 40-year-old self. Isn't that a little scary? To think about all the stuff you don't know? You need a shepherd. You need a shepherd because we're ignorant. We don't know as much as we need to know about life. We need a shepherd because what we do know about ourselves kind of scares us. What we know for absolute sure is this, that nobody really knows us, and if they did, they wouldn't like us. I mean, I think about that all the time. When I think about y'all and I think about, you know, people come to church to hear me tell them about Jesus. And I think if they really knew how hard it was for me to believe, they wouldn't be here. If they knew the size, the monumental doubts that I deal with week in and week out, why in the world would you be here? And maybe the reason why you're here is because I make you feel better about your monumental doubts. I don't know. You think, well, I'm better than him. We know ourselves. Actually, we don't know ourselves, but what we know about ourselves makes us a little frightened. We need somebody. We know that we're not able to trust ourselves to get through life when we're honest, when we're ever honest, when we ever get a little bit of perspective. We know how likely it is that we're wrong about things that we're absolutely sure of. And we know how dark our hearts are and how often we turn things to our own advantage when we shouldn't. We know we need a shepherd, but this is the difficulty. All we can find is hirelings. The only people we can find to shepherd us are hirelings. Now, hirelings aren't bad people. They're paid, right? Jesus doesn't say he's not talking about false shepherds in this situation. He says the hired hand. The hired hand's not a bad guy. He just makes an important business decision. He's out in the wilderness, in the darkness, and he hears a wolf howl. Now, he can go out into that darkness looking for a wolf who's a lot more equipped to the dark than he is. Or he can make a business decision. Go home. The wolf's probably only going to get one. I can get another job. I got a wife and kids depending on me. I'm going to go home. It's not bad. It's just that you're not as important. You're not the only thing in his life. Right? And that's really is life. That's one of the hard lessons, isn't it? That the people that we think care about us, they kind of care about us. But we're not nearly as important to them as we ought to be. Your teachers, I'm sure they care about you. They'll care about somebody else next year. If you stop paying tuition, they're going to stop teaching you. That's the way it works. They're not bad people. They just have to make a living. Your coaches, they kind of care about you, but you stop hitting the curveball, they're going to find somebody who can. They have to make a living. Your friends, I mean, they kind of care about you as long as you don't make them look bad. And you kind of do. Your boyfriends, your girlfriends, that's the worst of them all. They don't really care about you. They love the way you make them feel. And when you stop making them feel that way, they're going to bail. That's what, you know, marriage is, right? Marriage, you get 10 years, about seven to 10 years, to realize that this is not about how good you make me feel and start serving the other person. And about half people do that and half bail. That's honest. Right, you go from being a hireling to being a spouse. Even your parents, who love you so much, some of them didn't know what they were getting when they got you. They didn't mean to get you. You were an accident. And even the best parents, you know, it's pretty nice when our kids make us feel good about ourselves, and they don't always end up being what we wanted them to be. We need a shepherd. We need somebody to walk with us through life. We need somebody who loves us, even though our hearts are dark and our minds are ignorant, and all we can find are hired hands. And Jesus comes in and He says, not I am a good shepherd or I am one of the better shepherds. He says, I am the good shepherd. I'm the only one. And, I mean, this is just an unbelievable text. You can't do better than this. Yes, I'm preaching on it again this week. I'm going to preach on it again next week. It's just so rich, and I really encourage you to meditate on it every day. Take the bulletin home. Let's just walk through it together. What is so good about the shepherd? Beginning in verse 14. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Yeah, you talked about that last week. No. Last week we said He knows your name. Look what He says here in verse 15. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. I know my sheep just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. The kind of knowledge that you get from spending years beside somebody. The kind of knowledge you get from spending an eternity in the bosom of your Father. That's how Jesus knows you. He knows you intimately. He knows you with the kind of knowledge you only get from walking alongside someone for a lifetime. He knows you. My favorite illustration of this is from a movie. It's a little creepy, but you kind of have to remember this is an illustration. It didn't really happen. There's a movie called The Fisher King. It's kind of a funny, quirky, weird, dark movie. But there's a character, Robin Williams, who I look like, and so I watched all his movies, even the weird ones. And he's a very kind, sweet, psychotic man who lives in a park. And he has been he's gone out on this date with this girl that he's wanted to ask out forever. And at the end, and they have a just perfectly pleasant date. And at the end of the date, she says, "Will you do me a favor? Will you break up with me now? Because I know what's going to happen. You're going to come upstairs for a cup of coffee, and we'll end up drinking a glass of wine, and you'll spend the night. And then in the morning, you're going to be strangely distant. And you're not going to stay for breakfast, maybe a cup of coffee, but you're not going to stay for breakfast. And then I'm going to go to work feeling great for an hour. But you're not going to call. And I'm going to begin to feel worse and worse until I'm nothing more than a speck of dirt. Can you save me the trouble and just break up with me now?" And she walks off and he yells at her and he runs after her and he says, "I have something to confess to you. I already love you. I know you. I've been watching you. I know where you eat lunch every Wednesday. I know that you get a lollipop on your way back to work. I know that it takes you two tries to get through the door at the lunch hour because so many people are there and you kind of get pushed back in. I know that you're kind of clumsy. I know that you hate that about yourself. I know that you really struggle to understand that you're as wonderful as you really are. I know you. And I love you. And if you'll let me, I'll call you tomorrow and every day. And that's what Jesus says to you. He says, I know you. All that stuff about you that you hate, all those things about you that you're afraid of, all those things about you that are dark and you keep covered up, I know them. I know you. And not only do I know you, but I lay down my life for the sheep. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I love you with a love that is sacrificial. It's tempting for us to jump ahead to the cross on this, but it's important to understand that it's not just the cross he's talking about. It's his entire life. Everything about him has been one long, enormous, just overwhelming sacrifice for the sheep. He left heaven. He who is rich made himself poor for us. He left a place where it was impossible for him to know deprivation, where it was impossible for him to know poverty, where it was impossible for him to know pain, where it was impossible for him to know loneliness. And he came and he experienced all those things for us so he could be with us. His entire life was a sacrifice, and of course his death. Of course his death was the ultimate sacrifice. For him to stretch out his arms and to cry out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Well, knowing that the answer is because this is the only way that I can be with my sheep. I can't stress to you enough how shocking that is. Imagine living in the Old Testament. Imagine every year, at least once a year, you would celebrate the Passover and you would go and you would get a lamb and you would bring that lamb into your house and you would kill it and you would eat it and you would celebrate together that God is accepting the sacrifice of this lamb instead of making us give our lives. And Jesus says, no, I'm the shepherd who gives his life for the lambs. Give my life for you. I lay down my life for you. He lays it down voluntarily. This text has got so many mysteries in it. Verse 18, no one takes it from me. He wasn't killed by the soldiers. He wasn't killed by the Jews. He wasn't killed by his Father. He laid down his life of his own accord. I have authority to lay it down. There's a lot of theology there. He's not sinful. He doesn't have to die. His death is not a penalty for the price of sin. I have the authority to lay it down, and I have the authority to take it back again. He knows us and he loves us, knowing what it is going to cost. You know, those stories of just incredible sacrificial love that just, you know, make your heart long, excited and sad and bittersweet, and makes you all at one time just long to be loved like that and shrink back from having to love like that. I have favorite stories. You have favorite stories. I have one of a woman who's child was just deeply suffered from brain damage at birth. And the doctor told her he would never be able to see, he would never be able to speak. And he said, you know, there are places for children like Oliver. And she said, well, the place for Oliver is with us. He's coming home with us. Of course we'll keep him. And the doctor said, well, take him home and love him. He'll probably live to be about 5 years old. Oliver lived to be 33. And she loved him so wonderfully that on the day he died, the person who did the funeral acknowledged that he had, in 33 years, he had never been out of bed, and in 33 years, he never had a bed sore. She had taken such wonderful care for him, but she didn't ask for that. Jesus looked at you and said, to love them is going to mean sacrificing everything I've ever known. It's going to be sacrificing eternal joy. It's going to be sacrificing my very life. And he asked for that. He loved you knowing it was going to cost him that. He didn't. No one took it from him. He chose it. And then he says, that's why the Father loves me. That's why the Father loves me, because that's what God is like. That is consistent with His character. Love is not something that God does. Love is who He is. Love, this is how we know what love is. Not that God loved, not that we loved God, but that God loved us and gave His Son for us. It's a fascinating story to think about, right? God the Father looking on His Son going, I can't get my mind around this verse. That's why the Father loves me. Can't get my mind around. That's profound. Because I lay down my life for the sheep, because that is what we are like. That is what we're like. That is the perfect consistency with His character. What does this kind of love teach us? What do we learn from this? What do we learn from Jesus being the Good Shepherd? There's three things I want you to see. First is, I want you to see the true nature of your sin. The true nature of your sin. I want you to see how much it costs. I don't know if y'all noticed. You probably didn't because I'm hiding it so well. But I have an enormous scar on my face right here. So basically, 32 years ago, I picked a fight with the Son. And the Son won. I didn't know. I thought it was a tie, but the Son won. And so I found out last month that skin cancer, and it was the size of a pinhead. I mean, it was just teeny, you know, the kind of thing that your wife looks at your face and says, has that always been there? And I was like, well, if you don't know, then the answer must be no. So we're getting that taken off. And so I went in, had a biopsy. That probably got it all. But we just to make sure, I went back in to a plastic surgeon asking to make me look like Matthew McConaughey. But he gave me the Robin Williams instead. You don't know what they're doing. They're operating on your face, you know. So I'm just kind of sitting there going, this is kind of taking a while. And then I took the bandage off on Friday. It's like, good heavens. 9 stitches? 2 inches? A circle the size of a nickel? For a cancer the size of a pinhead? Isn't that just a little extreme? Yeah. Why? Why is he so extreme? Because one cell of cancer is one too many. And we look at our sin and we go, yeah, I mean, I'm starting to understand why Jesus would have to die for, you know, the kind of person who takes a gun into a shopping mall. But why for me? And the answer that comes back is, yeah, you don't have that much of the sin, but one cell of selfishness is one cell too many, and it's not going to stop growing. And somebody has to die for that. Someone has to die to take it. And so if you want to know how to feel about your sin, because we're expert lawyers, aren't we? We're just experts at arguing about why our sin is okay. And we're not being greedy, we're just being wise and thinking about the future. And we're not being selfish, we're just kind of, you know, self-care. It's just self-care. Just, you know, 20 minutes on the internet looking at whatever I want to look at. It's just feeling better. It's a reward. And if you want to know the true nature of sin, we don't look at the dark reasoning of your own heart. We look at the sacrifice of the shepherd. Because one cell is too much. That's the first thing that sacrifice teaches us. The second thing that sacrifice teaches us is the depths of God's love for us. Our value. How sometimes love just has to be demonstrated. It just has to be. I remember one day when my oldest son, he was like 4. We took him to get some shoes and bought the shoes and left. And then that night when we put him to bed, we realized we had left his teddy bear at the shoe store. So I went back the next day and I was like, you know, I think we left this old gray, nasty looking teddy bear. And she goes, yeah, you did. We kept it all day for you. And then she looked at where she kept it and goes, oh, I guess the cleaning lady threw it out. And so I went. I said, where did it go? She goes, it's in the dumpster out back. And so I went out and I dove into the dumpster. And I shared that dumpster with a Subway. So there's all this nasty food and onions and tomatoes in there. And it's Mississippi Delta and middle of summer. It's hot. And I'm just diving through this dumpster, opening every bag, pouring them out. Because I just love that teddy bear. No. I mean, why would I do it for that? It's nasty, germ-infested. Probably kill my son if I gave it to him the way I found it. I love my son. And that bear was valuable to me. And to measure the value of it, you have to see what we were willing to go through to get it. If you want to understand who you are and your value, your worth, it means you have to look at what Jesus was willing to go through to get you. We see in the sacrifice of the shepherd the danger of our sin and the depths of God's love, and ultimately we see the nature of Christ. You know what's really cool about this text? And I got this from commentaries. I don't remember this from seminary. I don't want to pretend like I do. When Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd, he doesn't use the word normally associated with good. That's agathos, good, you know, basically meaning good, not naughty, like a good boy. That's not the word he uses. He uses kalos, which is almost never translated good. It's usually translated beautiful. It's a richer word. When he says he's the good shepherd, it's much more than just moral. It means that he's beautiful. He's excellent. He is he's altogether lovely. He's altogether lovely. He's attractive. And the question is, don't you want to follow a shepherd like that? Don't you want to follow a shepherd like that? If you do, then please, we invite you to come take communion with us. We invite you to come and pray with us. Maybe you used to be following him, but you got sidetracked by other things that you thought cared about you. They don't. He alone is a good shepherd. Please pray with me. Our Father in heaven, we do come to the Good Shepherd. He and He alone loves us. He and He alone loves us knowing what He is getting. Would you give us the grace to follow after Him? Father, we turn away from the other things that we've been following after. Give us the grace to follow after Him. Amen.